Let's bring in Buster Olney of ESPN. Buster, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was wondering if you guys would move it. Just, congratulations. What a moment.
Thank
you. Also, you guys, like, everybody in Toronto probably needs a nap after that game.
Dude.
That was unbelievable.
Everyone today that I've seen around the building, you would think that it's everyone's just jacked up today to talk about this game. And to a degree, that's true. But there's also that, the idea of, like, it was hard to go to sleep after that game. It was hard not to just sit up and read articles and watch replays and watch every single little piece of, you know, you just want to continue to relive it as long as you can. And same thing with this morning. It's like a no booze hangover for the city today. Just euphoria hangover, I would say.
Well, and you could spend an eternity, and we will spend an eternity looking at all the faces on that beautiful picture. And forgive me, I don't know. I can't remember the name of the photographer who took it, but oh, that is a work of art, and all the emotions, the agony, defeat, and the whole thing. It was cool. We were doing Sunday Night Baseball, and I'm sure no one was watching at the moment that game ended. But I heard it was during the commercial break, and I just hear from the booth Matt Fiskerz and Alex Rodriguez going, "Oh my God! Oh my God!" And it wasn't until afterward that I got in the car, going back to the hotel, and I looked at video replay, and I'm like, "What? Four times it hits the rim." That was really cool.
Yeah, it was quite a moment. I think that picture is going to be dissected. It reminded me of when Sergio Garcia missed that putt at the Masters, if you remember that, on 18.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
To win it. And it's the opposite of that, where instead of just seeing everyone who is in disbelief that the shot was missed, this is the one where everyone is in disbelief and thrilled about the shot going in.
Or for the baseball hardos who remember the World Baseball Classic and Adam Jones making that catch in center field and remember.
Yeah, that's
right.
A great one, yeah.
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 Yeah. It was kind of like that. Is there a baseball equivalent to what Kawhi Leonard did, Buster? Because we're going to break down our favorite Toronto sports moments, and we're going to go back to the bat flip and
it's a walk-off.
And Jose Bautista. Yeah, but it was not just a walk-off, right? It was the dramatic, not knowing whether it was going to go in or not. Like, I guess you would need, like, a really high home run that took a long time and just barely scraped over the wall?
Well, I think, and I am a little bit biased because I grew up a huge Dodger fan, but Kirk Gibson in 88, mm-hmm. when he hits that home run off Dennis Eckersley, because you guys remember going into that game, he wasn't expected to play. He was so hurt. And in fact, that was the only plate appearance for him in that entire World Series. And Eckersley at that time gave up nothing. And Gibson's limping to the plate and barely fouling off pitches. And so suddenly, you know, gets his backdoor slider that he hits into the stands, which is why I think Jack Buck was, you know, was the one who's one of those announcing the game yelled that, "I don't believe what I just saw." It felt the same way as it happened.
No, yeah, and it's crazy.
And that's why today is so fun, is that you get so few moments as a sports fan of anything like that. Like, again, that's the first buzzer beater, true buzzer beater in a game 7 in NBA playoff history, which is hard to fathom. Mm-hmm. It was hard to believe that was actually a thing. But yeah, it's a special moment for the city. I think it was a special moment for basketball in general. And the only thing, Ben, when you said that, you know, whether that you're not sure if something's happening, that was when the Amish kid ripped that baseball. That was definitely not a home run against the Blue Jays, and then
six.
Lied about it in Kansas City. Yeah, the bearded kid. That was the only thing where it was like, is that out? Is that in? Is that out? Did he grab it? Why is he telling Aaron Andrews he grabbed it over here when we saw him actually grab it down there? Whatever. We're definitely over it. It's fine. We've moved past that, and everything's just okay.
So we're
trying to navigate what is, I think, that the first true rebuild in Toronto Blue Jays history. And I think it kind of starts with, one, clearly the level of patience and understanding what this is going to take. But from your standpoint, what do you think successful rebuilds need more so than anything else?
Well, first and foremost, and let's face it, the Blue Jays have a higher degree of they have a lower margin for error than a team, say the Astros or the Cubs, because the fact is that they play in a division with two superpowers, so they have to get things right. And I think first and foremost, we've seen with the success of the Cubs and Astros being instructive, you need to have a great core of young position players. And I'm not smart enough to tell you, you know, how good the Blue Jays guys are. I only listen to people with other teams and ask them off the record, you know, I'll say, "Hey, tell me what you think about these guys." And they're getting rave reviews from people with other teams who feel like the Blue Jays are executing the rebuild properly. And there's certainly going to be ugly moments, especially when you're playing in a division when, you know, arguably three of the best four teams in the American League are in it. The Blue Jays are going to get knocked around this year. They're probably going to get knocked around next year. But you assume that once they, you know, to get these guys to the big leagues and have them settle in, and I think that's what's going on with Vlad Jr. I think he's just putting a lot of pressure on himself. And they execute trades, Sanchez, Stroman, and get those guys back, they'll be in a good place. I do think that from the Blue Jays' perspective, it's going to be very important whenever they make these trades, Stroman and Sanchez, that they pick the right prospects. That's such a crucial factor in what they're going to be doing coming up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's already, the building blocks of the rebuild are already in place, and this is year one of not tanking, but not exactly putting a big focus on winning, and you've already got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and a Bo Bichette and maybe a Kevin Biggio and Nate Pearson's in the system. But yeah, you're right.
Yep.
Getting prospects back for those two guys is going to be paramount. What do you see as the market for them? Because we're living and dying really by every start. Well, with Sanchez, it's like, well, is he going to get hurt? Should they be working on trades immediately because the guy has a history of injury? And Stroman also coming off a season where he had an ERA over 5. What do you see as the market for those guys? Are they two of the more desirable pieces in Major League Baseball right now?
As they've thrown now, I would say this, and I do wonder how this factors in. I can't give you the answer to the Blue Jays thinking about, when to take the offers, how quickly to push through the process of completing a deal. Right now, one of the most desirable guys in the market is Madison Bumgarner. He's 29 years old. He's gotten off to a good start. He's using his fastball more. I talked to teams yesterday. Madison Bumgarner is available right now. Dallas Keuchel's a free agent. He's available right now. So from the Blue Jays' perspective, it's a competitive situation in terms of marketing their starting pitchers because there are other guys out there. And I have to believe that would compel the Jays to a place where if, let's say, the Milwaukee Brewers called the Jays today and said, look, we're interested in Stroman, we're interested in Sanchez, I got to believe the Blue Jays would take that call right now in earnest and begin trading names, exchanging names, and beginning the process of evaluating what's out there, because they know they're not going to beat one of the monster teams and the Rays this year, and it would make sense for them to market these two guys. You know, Marcus had some great moments early in the year. Sanchez, the other day, I think, reminded everybody, potentially how good he can be. I think they'll do fine in trades. I don't think they're going to get some huge blowout package for either guy, in part because of the volume of starting pitching that looks like it's going to be available this year.
Well, yeah, the Keuchel one is especially scary because you don't have to give up any assets to
right?
get Dallas Keuchel right now. Like, you don't have to reach into your minor leagues and say, okay, we're going to give up our A1 pitching prospects or our futures, who we think are going to be studs that our whole department is already attached to. We can leave them all alone for what will be, I would imagine at some point, there has to be a place where Dallas Keuchel decides, all right, I'll maybe take less on the term in order to play baseball. Do you think that that's actually movable for him, or is he someone that, he's just going to hold out until he gets something that's long-term?
No, I think he's gonna wait at least 21 more days. Because here's the deal, since the free agency period began at the end of last year's World Series, 197 days have passed. If he waits 21 more days, then he untethers himself from draft pick compensation. The time of the amateur draft, which is on June 3rd, that means he's no longer a team that signed him doesn't have to give up a draft pick. Same thing with Craig Kimbrell, the reliever who also is unsigned, and I think that's what those two guys now, it makes sense that they would wait for. I am really curious about Dallas' situation, though, because in the fall, when his agent, Scott Boras, was talking to teams, he told them, look, I want a 6 or 7 year deal for $25 to $30 million a year. I want I want a Max Scherzer deal. I want a David Price deal. And teams that heard that thought, that's insane. There's no way we're paying him that. The last offer that I know of was made to Keuchel was the beginning of March. The Astros offered him 1 year at $15 million or 2 years at $24 million. And if I were a friend, and I was talking about this with some Brewers this weekend, if I were a friend of Dallas Keuchel, a close friend, I'd say, dude, you got to sign.
Mm.
Like, you have to pitch because you're 31 and you got to get back out on the mound and reestablish yourself for the fall.
Yeah, a 30-year-old guy who relies on putting the ball in play. Yeah, probably not getting $30 million a year. for a long term. Talking to Buster Olney, so talked about, you know, trades maybe happening earlier, and yeah, Blue Jays hoping that none of their assets depreciate over time because they've already been screwed on a couple of guys, Jose Bautista and Josh Donaldson, who, yeah, they got nothing for. It didn't work out, trading them out of the organization. Do you get a sense? Because normally these trades, we all wait until the deadline, right? July, that's when these things happen. Is there any sense that maybe we get an earlier market, or is it going to play according to Hoyle again, and we'll have to wait until the middle of the summer?
Yeah, the speculation that I've gotten from general managers is there is going to be an earlier market because, as you guys know, they hardened that July 31st deadline. You know, no more August trades, no more September trades. There might be some teams are concerned about underhanded waiver type stuff. But generally speaking, if you're going to improve, it's got to be by July 1st. So general managers are saying they think that some of the teams that are on the borderline, what they might do is, say, at the beginning of June or middle of June, say, okay, we're going to add one or two guys now and see if we're good enough. That way we have time to move in the other direction if we decide we're not good enough. We can just flip guys. So let's say a team was interested in Stroman. Maybe they trade for him at the beginning of June, and that team doesn't win, then that team can flip Stroman before the deadline. So I do think there's going to be based on what I've heard, two rounds of trade stuff happening before July 31st as contenders try to figure out whether they're going to stay in it.
Are you surprised that it's fait accompli, or the way that it seems so fait accompli, that the Blue Jays are going to trade Stroman and Sanchez? Because this is something we've talked about a lot, but we don't really know where they're going to get pitching, and it seems like a bit of a dangerous strategy when you need to hit on a trade to require pitching come back in a trade rather than the best available package.
Yeah, and I don't know for sure if that's what the focus will be. For example, some of the best in-season trades made in recent years, if you guys remember when the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman, the Yankees got back Gleyber Torres.
Yep.
And their feeling was exactly what you said, just take the best available player. And right after the deal was made, Cubs people are telling me, boy, they picked the right guy. Mm. And maybe that's what the Blue Jays do once the options are out in front of them. And I also will tell you this, I feel like that and the Brewers and the Rays are two examples of this, where teams are looking at how they use their pitching staffs and use relievers. And I think there's more confidence that you can find a way, kind of like the NFL and running backs, you can find a way to put together pitching. You know, you don't necessarily just have to have five starters who are rolling out six, seven innings every time. And maybe that, you know, will give the Blue Jays some hope about structuring the staff that they put together moving forward. And I hear that a lot from Blue Jays fans on Twitter, where they'll say, why would you trade those two guys now? Because by the time those guys reach free agency, the Blue Jays are not going to contend. Like, at the time the Blue Jays theoretically would be really moving forward and becoming a factor in the American League East, those guys will be headed into free agency. You should flip them now while their value is higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talking to Buster Olney. So the guys in charge of making those decisions and trying to recoup the best assets for Stroman and Sanchez, they've had a bit of a checkered relationship with the fans here, and Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, and maybe some of it's unfair. But at what point is it fair to start evaluating those guys? Because Vlad Jr., that's not their signing. It was such a weird time that they entered the organization right after 2015, and the Blue Jays were back on the map in baseball terms because they make the playoffs and Alex Anthopoulos is the hero and they take over for him. When is it fair to start saying, all right, these guys are doing a good job, they're not doing a good job?
In my opinion, it's probably within 2 years, but not now. And I confess to you, I don't know all the prospects that they have. I don't know how good Pearson is. I can't tell you how good Biggio is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. Personally, but what I hear from other teams is they think the Blue Jays are doing a really good job of turning this over. And I think that, you know, it's important to remember also is that when they came in, I mean, Alex Anthopoulos did a smart and a great thing by doing what he could to get the Blue Jays back on the radar, by trading prospects to get them into the postseason, and that paid off. I think it reinvigorated the fan base, but there also was a cost. They did strip mine the farm system to make that happen, and so what's been going on the last couple of years with the front office is they've been backfilling. You're absolutely right to point out that, you know, some of the decisions they made in terms of, you know, Donaldson and how you handle him and how you handle Bautista didn't work out. And certainly Aaron Sanchez hasn't panned out the way people expected. Marcus has had some ups and downs as well. So it hasn't been perfect. And you know, one of the big questions I have moving forward is, how will they build in that pitching in what is typically a really offense-heavy American League East?